One of the cruel realities of not making much money in our society is that some things cost more when you're poor. Example, if you can't scrape up enough money for deposits to move into an apartment, you might instead get a motel room that costs more by the day or week. And that can lead to people not only living paycheck to paycheck, but going into debt to cover costs. A recent report examined debt among Oregonians not making much money. The title is pretty clear. Low-income Oregonians report heavy debt levels with long-term consequences. The report comes from the Center for Responsible Lending and several partners in an alliance in the region. Ezekiel Gorosino is with the Center for Responsible Lending. He's a government relations and policy associate. Ezekiel, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Jeffrey. Thank you so much for having me on the program, and good morning to everyone.
Good morning to you, and thank you for joining us. And Rachel Stein is with us as well. She's with an organization called Innovative Changes, which involves low-dollar lending. We'll get into what that means, where she is the Innovative Products Manager. Rachel, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Jeffrey. Thanks for having us on the show. Looking forward to it, and morning to the listeners.
All right. Same. Thank to you for being here. Ezekiel, start us off. Tell us a bit about the Center for Responsible Lending.
Yes. So the Center for Responsible Lending is a national nonprofit that fights predatory lending practices at the state and federal level. These predatory lending practices that I refer to are basically payday lending, card title loans, and as well as student loans at this moment, credit card fees, and mortgages as well.
So do you find as you look, if you're kind of calling yourself the Center for Responsible Lending, I have to believe that you find a lot of this, what you just talked about, as irresponsible lending.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Well, the name of your organization is Center for Responsible Lending. So does that mean the stuff you just described is often irresponsible lending?
Well, it really depends on the practices these lenders are carrying out. What we would like to see is for these products to actually help the consumer in general, that this product actually takes them to the next level in their financial well-being. Oftentimes, we see what we call bad debt, like payday loans or card title loans or installment loans, that actually, instead of helping the individual, take their hard-earned money by charging exorbitant triple-digit APRs. Those products we do not call responsible lending at this moment.
What kind of interest rates are we talking about? And just for context, the current prime lending rate is, somewhere around 6% maybe?
Well, in the state of Oregon, a payday loan at the moment has an average APR of about 150-something percent. So that is quite high compared to, like you say, the prime rate, which is about 4 or 5%.
At 150%, how many people ever actually pay off those payday loans?
Well, it is very interesting that you ask that question, because a report by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau actually showed that most of the fees made by payday lenders come from people who take more than 10 loans in a year. We call that a cycle of debt, in which an individual takes a payday loan, they have to pay it back again on their next paycheck, unfortunately, because they have other expenses, like rent or putting food on the table, they may not have enough money left. So they take another payday loan that will then carry more fees and basically just puts them into a cycle that is very difficult to escape from.
All right. So they're short on money because they're paying back the last loan, and that requires the need to get another loan.
That's correct.
Wow. So tell me about the process of coming up with this report on low-income Oregonians and their debt loads. What led to that?
Well, all of our organizations that work on, formed a coalition called the Stop the Debt Trap Alliance. It's a new coalition this year of community organizations and advocates that, as a goal, want to bring attention to consumer issues and fighting for consumer protections at the state level. And all of our organizations are interested in poverty issues and consumer protections and also wealth building or asset building. And we wanted to fully understand the impact of the debt loads that people have on low-income families in Oregon. So the idea of the survey came up, and we just ran with it. We asked questions about different types of debt, and we got over 400 responses from over 100 different zip codes in Oregon.
How many responses?
Over 400.
Okay, which is not a bad sample size, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so tell us a bit about your organization, Rachel, Innovative Changes. And first of all, how do you pronounce IC dollar sign?
We just say innovative changes.
Okay.
But yes, our initials are IC dollar sign. And I'm the innovative products manager here, and we are a financial empowerment nonprofit. We're located in Portland, but we work throughout Oregon, and we're actually part of CASA of Oregon, which works throughout Oregon, offering asset building. They also do affordable housing development and manufactured home cooperative development. And here at Innovative Changes, we offer classes, coaching, credit building, and responsible small dollar loans.
I noticed that. It's the small dollar loans. Like, how small?
Traditionally, our loans have gone up to about $1,000. Some are up to $1,200. So they're pretty small. We were really created to be a responsible alternative to those payday loans that Ezekiel was talking about.
And so not only small dollar, but what kinds of interest rates do you charge?
So as compared to an APR of 150 or more percent, we have a maximum APR of 36%, which to some people might sound kind of high, mm-hmm. but we're actually comparable in price to a personal loan from a credit union.
So let's talk about what Oregon has done through legislation to clamp down on some of the irresponsible lending we've been talking about. There has been some legislation, hasn't there, Rachel?
There has been some. I think Ezekiel has a little more detail about that.
Okay.
So, back in 2007, the Oregon legislature actually took some steps to rein in some of the worst aspects of payday lending. Unfortunately, payday lenders actually have exploited some loopholes in that reform. And in our report, we actually asked a question about if these individuals, these families have taken payday loans, and a quarter of them actually said that they had taken a payday loan or a car title loan in the last year. What makes that a little more worrisome is that about a third of them said that they were unable to repay that loan without having to reborrow, and a quarter of them said that they have taken more than one loan at a time, which is goes against some of the actual reform that took place in 2007, because there's an explicit clause that says that there has to be a seven-day cooling off period between loans. So again, having multiple payday loans only worsens the harms of this high-cost debt product. There's plenty of evidence that shows that using a payday loan actually puts the individual at risk of going deeper into debt, because there's the accumulation of NSF fees, not sufficient fund fees, bounce check fees. They may even lose their bank account and still be sent to collections, where more fees will be added to the principal, be subject to harassing phone calls, and even get their wages garnished.
So if you're in debt, you tend to get further into debt from the sounds of it.
Yes, by using this type of products, you are getting deeper into debt. It's very important to remember that with predatory products, they don't solve the cash flow problems. More often, they just trap you into this cycle of taking a high-cost loan after a high-cost loan.
We're talking about debt levels for low-income Oregonians. Based on this report, low-income Oregonians report heavy debt levels with long-term consequences. It was released by the Center for Responsible Lending, which, along with Innovative Products, is part of the Stop the Debt Trap Alliance in Oregon. We're talking to Ezekiel Gorosino from the Center for Responsible Lending and Rachel Stein from Innovative Changes. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760. Questions you might have, or maybe even stories to tell about ways that you got trapped into a low income and high debt loan cycle. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. As far as the report goes, Ezekiel, this is a self-reported survey, is that right?
Yes, we actually, this was not meant to be a random survey. We really wanted to get a clear picture of the struggles the families, our organizations work with, and, what they're dealing with. The results of that survey is basically this report. And what we found was very shocking. These families are carrying debt loads of various types, including student loans, payday loans, as we mentioned earlier, credit cards, and medical and utilities debt. These households, like I said, are experiencing significant financial distress. They're dealing with debt collections and lower credit scores. And, it's very important to mention that heavy debt loads are actually creating big obstacles to building financial security. And even the benefits of what we call good debt, you know, like a mortgage or a student loans, which have been traditionally used to move a person forward in life, those debts can easily be, or those gains can easily be erased when they are characterized by predatory lending and collection practices.
Ezekiel, have you done similar surveys in other states?
We have done plenty of research in other states that show similar patterns. You know, particularly when it comes to payday lending, one of the things that we have found in many different states, including California, Florida, North Carolina, is that they tend to cluster on communities of color. And that is quite troublesome because these communities, again, you know, are often victims of predatory lending practices.
So compared to other states, I mean, are Oregonians facing about the same as what you find in other states, or is it a little worse here, a little better here?
Well, it's something that we see almost in every single state, but there are some states where this is no longer an issue, and that is because the legislature has either passed a 30-seat rate cap inclusive of all, you know, charges and fees, and other states have actually done so by a ballot measure.
So, but you mentioned that Oregon did in 2007 rein in payday lending, but people are still getting payday loans in the state of Oregon with rates up to 150%.
Well, yes, the law that took place has a rate cap, but it does allow for a one-time origination fee that brings up the actual APR to about 150%.
Okay, so the rate itself is not listed as that high, but you include that that initiation fee with it and the loan initiation fee, and zoom, up goes the amount that you got to pay for your money.
That's correct.
So, Rachel Stein, I mean, you're already at work here in Oregon, so I can't imagine any of the findings are of particular surprise to you, but were there some particular things that you can see responding to at Innovative Products?
So we're Innovative Changes, actually.
Innovative Products
is my title.
Right.
We were not particularly surprised. You're correct. We actually found that a lot of the information that was discovered in this report mirrored what we see with the people that we work with. We found, for example, that more than half of people reported that they or a family member have outstanding student loans, and a third of those people with student loans were behind on their monthly payments. And more than half of the people with student loans reported having postponed a large purchase, like a car or even a home, because of these loans. And I can tell you just from working with these folks every day that this is a really accurate picture of what people are facing in Oregon, is that things like homeownership are becoming increasingly out of reach because of heavy debt levels.
This sounds like a really difficult cycle to get out of. I mean, if you've got a ding in your credit rating and you're going to the high dollar lenders, you're probably there because you're not able to get money from the more places with the more reasonable rates.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. And that is what becomes kind of difficult, is because these predatory lenders tend to cluster in neighborhoods that don't have access to banking, or they market to people who don't have good credit scores and things like that. So I really encourage people to look to their local community and see if any nonprofits in their area offer services to help them if they're looking for a loan or if they're looking for a way to get out of debt. People can also go to my agency's website at innovativechanges.org to learn about our services, because we do work throughout Oregon, even though we're based in Portland. And I encourage people also to, while they don't need a loan, to build a relationship with their local community-based financial institutions and credit unions. So do that now and work on your budget now before you have a problem, and hopefully you can avoid it in the future. But it is a really big problem that brings up a lot of larger questions about, you know, are people making enough money and things like that.
We're talking about debt in Oregon on low-income people with Rachel Stein of Innovative Changes and Ezekiel Garcino from the Center for Responsible Lending. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Ezekiel, I haven't talked about what low-income means here. We're talking the people who showed up in your survey showed some really low incomes, didn't they?
Yes. So the median household income for the people that we surveyed is very low. It's actually between $20,000 to $30,000. And about a third of those people, of the entire population that we surveyed, actually are living on incomes below $20,000. So that makes about two-thirds of them living or surviving with less than $50,000 a year. Just to put that into comparison, the median income in Oregon is $53,000 a year. So that puts, again, two-thirds of this population living below the median income of Oregon.
Well, a bunch of them below half the median income, too, it would appear, yeah.
That's correct.
So of these people you're talking to, median income $20,000 to $30,000, I mean, do they all have debt? Or were some people, and I imagine this is a small number, were debt-free?
There was a very small number that were debt-free. We asked, the majority of them had either one or a variation of a couple of different debts. We asked about student loans, debt collections, payday and car title loans, mortgages, credit cards, utilities, car loans, medical debt, and fines and fees. And most of them had a couple of those different debts.
All right. And so so the car title loans, are those you'd actually get a loan on your car title, and if you don't pay back the loan, they take your car?
Yes. This was one of those products that, at least within our sample, the families are actually not using it as much as payday loans. And it may be because there's that threat of repossession. You know, low-income individuals have to really rely a lot sometimes on their own transportation to get from one job or the next, particularly if they have more than two jobs at a time, which we also found that to be true for a lot of these individuals. So that threat of repossession may really be pushing these individuals to either not take those loans as often, or to, if they actually had one, to try to get a second loan to cover the first loan, and again, putting them themselves at a higher risk of falling into the cycle of debt.
So, Rachel Stein, this is a real tough cycle again. I mean, you called it the Stop the Debt Trap Alliance for a reason. I mean, it's once you get in, it's really hard to get out. So, I mean, what would be some of the first steps if somebody says, look, I know what you're saying, don't get these high-interest loans, but I need money, and I need it right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the first thing that people should do is try at their local credit union or small community bank or bank. But we understand that a lot of people aren't going to have access to that. So they can look at nonprofits like us. There are some other nonprofits and some larger credit unions that do work with folks to try to help them. But part of the issue also is that even, you know, people do fall behind on their loans. People do get behind because of various reasons, including financial emergencies. And we have to protect those people. So we have to make sure that we are requiring, you know, common sense standards, that we're not allowing our debt collectors to harass people, and that people have an option to set up some sort of a payment plan if they're not able to keep up with their original payments.
All right, but this is a hard time convincing people, I would think, because if they've shown that they've missed a payment here and there, and therefore they have to borrow money, this is not a kind of place that, you know, a bank is going to want to plunk some money down.
Yeah, that's correct, and that's part of why we're really encouraging more laws that are going to close the loopholes in the payday lending laws to prevent debt stacking. There are two bills in the new legislative session that are really good to support. One does close that loophole that Ezekiel was talking about earlier, so it prevents payday lenders from giving people more than one loan at a time so they can maximize their fees and line their own pockets. A lot of times payday lenders will allow and even encourage people to take out multiple loans because they can charge that origination fee on each loan. The other bill that we are supporting creates a licensing requirement for student loan servicers in Oregon so that they can be regulated like other types of loan servicers and protect consumers from being harassed or given incorrect information so that at least if you do fall behind on payments, you're able to find a reasonable way to catch up.
That's interesting. So student loan servicers are not licensed in the state of Oregon at the moment.
That's correct. There's no special licensing for student loan servicers. But in Oregon, we have a really long tradition of consumer protection. And so pretty much every other type of lender and collector is licensed. It gets a little bit complicated because a lot of those student loans originate with the federal government. But we believe that if the servicers are working in the state of Oregon, that they should have to follow our consumer protection laws.
Ezequiel Garcino, there still seems to be a lingering belief in society that people are poor because they're lazy or they're not making much money because they just haven't put a lot of effort into it. How much of an obstacle is that sense to changing laws on lending?
It is definitely something that we have encountered, but it is important to notice and to mention that these families are doing everything they can, right, to get by, to get ahead. And, these debt loads that they are carrying, like I mentioned earlier, even if it's good debt right now, they are basically, if it's with the wrong lender or with the wrong servicer, they're being exploited. So even a person who's doing the right thing at the right time can fall behind because of the practices that these servicers and these lenders are allowed to do. That is, again, going back to what Rachel said, it's about justice, it's about fairness, and it's about actually helping those individuals who are doing the right thing get ahead.
Just to give you some numbers here again, one out of every three people reported that they've been contacted by a debt collector in the previous year. One out of every four have used a payday or car title loan in the past year. One in two report that they or a family member has outstanding student loans. That gives you some picture on the debt. Rachel Stein, before we go, I want to ask just about the merger you mentioned with your organization, Innovative Changes, and CASA, Court-Appointed Special Advocate. Is that the CASA program for the whole state?
This is actually a different CASA.
So
there's a couple of different organizations that sound very similar. But this CASA of Oregon is the largest FO for IDAs in the state of Oregon. So individual development accounts are this great program that we have in our state where low-income individuals can save to meet an asset goal, to purchase an asset like higher education, a home, or a small business, something of that nature, and receive a 3-to-1 matching grant. And so that's one of the biggest things that CASA does. So it fit really neatly with what we do at Innovative Changes, which is trying to empower people to improve their own financial situation and empower communities to really come up with solutions to some of these tough problems. But CASA of Oregon is a great partner, has been a great partner of ours for a long time. We started this merger about a year and a half ago, and we're really excited to be able to work with them and really amplify our work.
Okay, not CASA as court-appointed special advocate for kids. Okay, good to know. Glad we cleared that up.
Community and shelter assistance.
Perfect. Rachel Stein is with Innovative Changes, as you heard, merging with CASA. She's the Innovative Products Manager there. Ezequiel Garcino is with the Center for Responsible Lending, where he's a Government Relations and Policy Associate. Thank you both for joining us on The Exchange today.